evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, February 6th. Boy, is time flowing. It seems like just not long ago we were saying Happy New Year to each other. And now we're already into February. So there you go. Time flies. But the older I get, the better I was, I like to think. So as always, I pay homage and thanks to the suits in the office at bbsradio.com for promoting free speech, free thought, and I would hope free enterprise, because property rights, civil rights, and human rights are pretty much inseparable once you understand the economics behind the reasoning. But yes, thanks again to the suits for promoting free speech, free thought, First Amendment rights. Thank goodness for alternative radio, which at least for my sponsors, my hosts, are not under the thumb of the corporate Zionist pro-Israel media opinion cartel, which constantly props up the regimes. We're given the illusion that there's a difference between the parties, when as who I think is rather despicable, Carol Quigley, who wrote, I think it was Hope and Tragedy, was allowed to examine the globalists' inner workings and papers and all such, and he was pro one world, you know, world government, the world government crowd. He just wished it was more open. They were more open about it. But he did say that their aims are to create an illusion as if there's a difference between the parties. Now, you might think that there is now with the Obama disaster, but especially in terms of foreign policy and military spending, they're pretty much the same. You know, the foreign policy remains the same. So Carol Quigley was essentially correct. There's, you know, pretty much no difference between the parties. It's just an illusion. It's a facade. You have a right wing. Right now we have a right wing socialist, corporate socialist type, Romney versus a left wing corporate socialist type. I sort of take issue with those who would say Obama is a Marxist. He's more like a corporatist, a corporate socialist, the Mussolini corporate socialist type, where they blur the lines between industry and government. And by the way, here on my show, Third Stream View, if you care to call in, the number is 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. If anybody cares to call in, any questions about geopolitics, current events, economics, history, those sort of things that I might be able to answer you on, or give some information, provide some information, or some debate, which haven't had much of on this show, because most of the guests who've called in or I've spoken with are, I'm sort of not preaching to the choir, but we're on the same page. So I haven't got to clash with anybody. I've clashed on Facebook and some computer emails. I've clashed with a few strangers about foreign policy, and they're usually the typical chicken hawk neocon. Most of them haven't served. I haven't served in the military, nor do I think it's my duty or my civic duty, and I'm especially against the draft or conscription, which is nothing other than legalized slavery. So for those who want to join the military, I mean, that's fine. That's fine, but as long as they know that they're really not they're not defending the U.S., they're defending and supporting a globalist, sorry, an unconstitutional American empire, a globalist empire. Of course, Afghanistan is notably referred to as the graveyard of empires. And the U.S. is finding that out now. Billions spent, trillions spent. There's what, 30 to 40 Al-Qaeda members? I mean, they need to negotiate with the Taliban. They negotiated with the North Koreans. They negotiated with the Russians. I mean, the feds have negotiated with the Vietnamese. So what? You can't negotiate with the Taliban? Seems like the writing's on the wall that they have to do that. So, and also to the CIA and the FBI and Mossad and those other pricks that are listening tonight, thank you for your destructive nature. All wrapped up in the flag, of course. I like that saying. I forget who said it, but they said, if fascism ever comes to America, it will come as the cross wrapped in the flag. And I can sure see that with the Christian Zionists who want to defend Israel at all costs. But where was I? Back to the parties, the two parties. The one government party with two barking heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings. That's what we have. And except for Ron Paul, all the other candidates are completely beholden to the Israeli lobby and the military-industrial complex. And Ron Paul is not. I hope Ron Paul never speaks at AIPAC. He's taken a lot of heat because of his positions on foreign policy and, of course, on foreign aid. So apparently now if you want to cut off American tax dollar aid to Israel, that's also anti-Semitism. Some people would equate that with, which is ridiculous. I mean, Ron Paul wants to cut off all foreign aid, but, you know, I thought anti-Semitism was hatred or a prejudice against Jews. Now it's cutting off money. Imagine that, cutting off money to the richest sector in society, the most successful tribe of people in the world. If you cut money off to them, to their sacred little state of Israel, now that's referred to as anti-Semitism. They're really stretching the definition of that term. And, of course, I like the modern definition of anti-Semitism, or an anti-Semite, which is a person that Jews don't like. I thought that was much more appropriate. So, yes, I'm winging it tonight. I don't have any guests. I've been busy. I wasn't able to line somebody up, so I'm going to speak off the top of my head, which I can do pretty intellectually. I'm going to cover a lot of topics. Quite often, history, especially revisionist history, and thank goodness for revisionism. Otherwise, you'd be letting sleeping dogs lie, and we'd be believing our fairy tale public school history books, textbooks, and the way that they interpret history, which, of course, as always, is written by the winners or the rulers. So thank goodness for revisionist history, which, of course, is derided by, you know, status quo and whatnot. But I've been debating online a few neocon chicken hawks about foreign policy and about Ron Paul. And I have this vice grip question I ask them now. And every time I've asked it, they never give me a clear answer. They dance around or they try to answer it with a question. Well, let me tell you what this question I formulated is, and you may use it in your travels and your conversations. For those of you out there, or for those people who dislike Ron Paul or hate Ron Paul or fear Ron Paul, I would like to know what your message is to the growing numbers of veterans and active duty military who enthusiastically support Ron Paul financially and or morally and or vocally and or patriotically. I want to know what your message is to those people. Would you call them kooks and nuts in tinfoil hats also? Would you smear them and say the same things to them as you do to those of us who enthusiastically support Ron Paul for intellectual, philosophical reasons? Would you say the same thing to them? And they can't answer the question. They won't directly answer it. And I love the way I've shaped it because it puts them on a defensive. Their back is completely against the wall. They don't have a good answer, and they can't shut me off like talk radio. That's what I like about my show. You can't shut me up on Facebook or the internet. You can't shut somebody up. Yeah, you can, what do you call it, ban them or whatever that is. I forget the term. When you disallow them to be on there, you can block them. You know, but here you can't do that. And for those who oppose Ron Paul or fear him or hate him, I've got news for you. We're here to stay. The Ron Paul Republicans, that is the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, we're here to stay. We're here to reform things. We're here to put the neoconservatives who have infiltrated the Republican Party on notice, or just to run them out of town. because that's what they deserve. And they just want more war. More war, more empire, American exceptionalism. Well, I got news for the neocons. America is exceptionally broke, and you want to make it broker. Thank you very much. War is very expensive. It's also very expensive for the winner, because the government grows, the state grows, their bureaucracy grows, the military-industrial complex grows. And what I like to say about the military-industrial complex is, yes, we need a military. We get that. It's in the Constitution. But this vast, huge American military-industrial complex is sucking very precious investment capital away for more important private sector market reasons, investments. That precious capital needs to be directed through market forces, not bound up into the military-industrial complex and all its works and pomps and all its tentacles involved in so many things. Of course, along with the CIA, which is heavily involved in it, and of course the DEA. DEA being Department of Eggheads and A-holes. But they're very involved in everything, CIA. They've infiltrated the universities, of course, the media. And I think that right now what's going on in Syria, as tragic as it is, I think it's being greatly fomented by the CIA and their buddies, the Israeli Central Intelligence Agency, the Mossad. And Mossad's mantra is, by deception we make war. And of course, I believe that Mossad's fingerprints are heavily all over 9/11, with probably some help from the CIA. I don't think Bush was in on it, but I think Cheney was. Of course, he had conducted the NORAD stand down, for those of you who don't know. He was conducting military drills that day. So the air traffic controllers didn't know if it was military drills, if it was a hijacking, was it business as usual? So how convenient to throw them off. So Cheney, that son of a bitch, he's the main evil culprit, I believe. And Bush was just the dunce who it fell into his lap, so he had sort of plausible deniability. I don't think Bush knew much about it at all. Of course, his cabinet meetings, they were having these, you know, prior to 9/11, they had a lot of reports about terrorist activity and such. I mean, I saw on Alex Jones' show something from the Pentagon, which they took down right away. It shows the Pentagon, it showed it as a model with planes, you know, crashing into it, or planes laid in the center of it. It had war games with planes actually hitting it. So who knows, maybe those planes were also flown electronically, where they had to hit the buildings. They were flown, you know, electronically. And now I was thinking it was thermite was heavily involved, and it probably was to an extent, but now there's other technologies. I can't think of the name, but a friend of mine forwarded it to me, where they use, I don't know if they use radio waves or sound waves, but some immense kind of power that they can bring destruction to. In fact, I saw an interesting episode of Jesse Ventura's, his conspiracy type shows, about HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, up in Alaska, and the havoc it's wreaking. They're trying to say it's not military, but you know it is. And they're shooting all these radio waves into the atmosphere up there in Alaska. And who knows what the fallout's going to be? Probably more bad weather. Maybe hurricanes, maybe tornadoes. I mean, it's awful if they are. And who knows? It's all top secret, all wrapped up in patriotism, and the people don't know. So much for transparency. You know, I know there's supposedly got to be government secrets, but, you know, they've abused that privilege for, you know, over a century. So who knows? And now I'm going to talk about Syria. Because I can. It's my show. I don't care for the dictator, although he's better than his father was, better than the old man. And I thought things were pretty smooth there, but, you know, the Arab Spring, they're rising up there too. But I think it's greatly, as I said, fomented by the CIA and the Mossad, and of course MI6, Britain's version of the CIA. And they all work together. CIA, Mossad, MI6, they are the masters of deception. And people I've debated on Facebook, you know, they like to throw that conspiracy word out, and they like to, you know, talk down to you and use those terms. And I say, hey, I reject using conspiracy theory, because to me it sounds like a type of censorship or persecution of dissent. It's like saying anti-Semitism. You know, you're supposed to scare people off and shut down dissent. So by saying, oh, that's conspiracy or conspiracy theories, well, then they're trying to do the same thing. But I reject all that nonsense. And since I am so much more informed and much more better read and understanding of foreign policy and what's going on in the machinations of the CIA, I get ridiculed like in these debates that I have a few of. You know, kooks. We're the kooks. We're the nuts. We're the, you know, we don't know what we're talking about. Meanwhile, a lot of my opponents, they just seem clueless. They speak the status quo talk radio, Fox News mentality. They're usually chicken hawks and neocons. And they just ramble on. And so, you know, I've tried to shape my debating with them by asking them questions. And I've nailed a few of them. They agreed that they were pretty much strict constitutionalists, as I am. Although I like to rework a lot of the Constitution and you know, it's a workable document, it's a usable document, but I wish it gave a lot less power to the state and prohibited federal income taxes. But anyway, that's how I set up my little trap to these so-called conservatives, who are actually neoconservatives, neocons, and of course, mostly Christian, a lot of them, you know. I say, So tell me, are you pretty much a strict constitutionalist? Oh, yeah, I am, PK. Yeah, I am. Yep. Follow the Constitution. I say, fine, so am I. And then I get into the practicalities of it and the reality of it. I said, therefore, you know, I'm opposed to any type of torture, you know, because it's in the Constitution. It's in the Eighth Amendment, where it clearly says no cruelty, or I think is it torture, it's prohibited. What are the exact wording? Nor cruel and unusual punishment. Cruel and unusual punishment. So, you see where I'm going with this? To the pro-Gitmo, the pro-torture crowd with Cheney's lies and his BS about enhanced interrogation techniques, you know, another name for torture, which Cheney should have been waterboarded every day. Anyway, what doesn't Sean Hannity understand about the Constitution and what the Eighth Amendment says? Nor shall cruel and unusual punishments be inflicted. I believe it's the Eighth Amendment. Being the Bill of Rights, of course, are the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. But back to no cruel or unusual punishments inflicted. And I've had them neocons try to twist their way out of that one. You know, well, they weren't on American soil, this and that. Well, you know, if they're under American custody, then they should be granted the rights under the Constitution that the rest of us are. I mean, if somebody gets arrested in the States, let's say he's here illegally, but he has no criminal background, never been arrested, you know. I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, hopefully that thought will come back to me. Oh, it'd be like a somebody getting arrested, and it for no crimes at all. I mean, yeah, no record. Maybe he was arrested for, let's say, jaywalking in California. Well, you can't torture these people. You can't torture prisoners. Jesse Ventura even said it. Why don't we torture our own criminals or defendants? Why don't we torture them? Because we don't. I mean, the military and the CIA does to foreigners outside of this country. And people will say anything when they're tortured. I don't believe that enhanced interrogation makes that much of a difference. And of course, they like to show the extremes. Well, if, you know, if it saves a building from being blown, knocked down, or, you know, terrorism and all this, well, you know, the right in this case, the conservatives, Republicans, really got a hard on for all this terrorism stuff. But the Democrats are pretty much the same way. They just seem a little more subdued. Of course, Obama's awful with all this, as I like to say. Obama is the first black president to bomb Africa. You know, even though he had a white mother, he's a mixed race president. And I always like to say that when I see Obama speak and hear him speak, I do not see a mixed race person. I see a smooth-talking lawyer who remains clueless about economics, political economy, and economic history. And just to see him continue to advocate the policies he does, it makes me want to throw up, this guy. He's like, he's clueless about more regulation, more taxes. Of course, he is a lawyer, and I have a bone to pick with lawyers generally. My grandpa didn't care for them either. He was a very successful businessman, and he used to pride himself on the fact that he spent basically nothing on legal fees every year. He had a lawyer, longtime family friend, but he wasn't on a retainer, I don't believe. But lawyers helped overregulate our whole society. I mean, you know, both Clintons were lawyers. Both Obamas are lawyers. Probably more than half the politicians are lawyers. So they keep legislating and regulating. It's good lawyer work. It's good for their profession. But it spins out more rules and regulations. And along with that, I'm sure will come more lawyers, or the state or the protected industries have their own, you know, stable of lawyers, including antitrust lawyers. So they tweak the system to suit themselves. I mean, in my world, you need lawyers. I understand that for a conflict resolution and estate planning and this sort of thing, but not the ambulance chaser or somebody's in a bad accident and then the attorneys, let's say they're able to get $20 million in a settlement. Well, they're going to take a third of that, even if it's really obvious who was at fault or severe negligence or, you know, drunk driving. The lawyers are still going to take a third, the bastards, or even more. So I don't care for lawyers, and I would never marry a lawyer, because divorce is difficult enough. But to be divorced from a lawyer is a whole other can of worms, because they can really help take you to the cleaners. They twist and pervert prenuptial agreements, so unless you absolutely need one, you know, to me, they're to stay away from. And their fees are ridiculous. And what do lawyers have? They have an office with usually many books, you know, and a secretary. And they don't have an inventory of plant and equipment. You know, they don't have any of that stuff. And they have a library and a secretary. So when they get these huge settlements, they get at least a third of that. And to me, it's just ridiculous what they get. I'd rather see lawyers' power cut back a lot. But most politicians are lawyers. So we're stuck in that paradigm, sort of. That's why I like term limits. I mean, the president has term limits. What's wrong with that? Democracy is still served. More people serve. And they like to say that, you know, we don't need term limits. We have elections. Well, after election, keep electing these same big government clowns, and that's a problem. So I am opposed to most of what lawyers do, or the opportunity that they have to do what they do. Over-regulating the economy, passing more laws. I mean, all these damn lawyers, you would think by now that they would have repealed the drug war, you know, because it's just useless. It's a trillion-dollar waste since its inception, and it just makes things much worse when the focus should be on education, prevention, treatment, and, you know, of course, exercise and complete sobriety, staying away from the things that got you there in the first place. But still, with the whole drug thing, the drug war, and those who are infected by drugs, you know, treatment and rehabilitation is much cheaper than building more walls and more prisons. You know, we don't treat alcoholics like drug criminals. They both have an issue, they both have medical problems, and that's how it should be treated. You know, but to just throw somebody in jail or prison because he's an addict, and if he doesn't get treatment or help, that's not helping his situation. It'd probably make him even more bitter and anxious to learn street trade or street crime from his other buddies he'll meet in the joint, so to speak. So I can't watch those damn cop shows. I hate those shows, those reality shows where they go after and bust these people. Even though some of these people that they bust have it coming if they're driving under the influence heavily. But just smoking a little pot here, possession of marijuana, what a waste of the whole system to even go after these people. As broke as the states are, of course, maybe they want to use that revenue. Like I was in Florida, and the cops are like revenue enhancers now. You know, so many cops out, I noticed on the 95 during Christmas time and New Year's, that I'm thinking they're just there to help get more revenue, you know. So it's a problem. And states are, I don't know if the states are broke, but a lot of them have had to cut back, and it's upsetting teachers and, you know, firemen or police. So as my grandpa told me probably about 34, 35 years ago, he said, PK, the government is the worst manager of anything. You look at anything it runs, the trains, the train stations, Amtrak, for example, an inefficient, subsidized mess. They should sell it to the highest bidder. Unload it. Unload the taxpayers from it. And it's had plenty of its own accidents. Gee, it's had accidents, but it's run by the government. It's owned by government. It's government owned. It's basically a socialist train system. And it's had plenty of accidents. So at the time, I would have voted against it. I wasn't allowed to vote, though. And I think if people knew you were a Democrat then or a Republican, it was more significant than nowadays. So we'll see. Anyway, Ron Paul's moved on to, I believe it's Colorado and Minnesota. Those primaries are coming up with, I think, Washington State. So hopefully he's in it for the long run and he'll get to speak at the convention or make a little other trouble somehow. And here's a point I want to make. Ron Paul shouldn't run third party. I'm opposed to it. I used to be sort of for it, but not concretely until I heard both sides. And the Republican Party will censure him and punish him if he were to run as a third party. However, he doesn't have to run as a third party because they will persecute Rand Paul And I'd just call them out on this in front. I'd say I would say if I was Ron Paul, I would say, well, you know, I've decided I don't like absolutes, and I've hemmed and hawed a little bit about if I was going to run as a third party candidate. Well, I'm here to tell you today that I am not running as a third party candidate. That promise I am making. I am not running this year as a third party candidate. Hold your thunderous applause. However, I am going to endorse the Libertarian Party candidate who is actually somebody, I don't care if it's one of those idiots from last year, Wayne Allen Root or what was his name? The other lawyer with the glasses, real kind of a nerd. That idiot was a very pro-drug warrior, and then he changed his tune. Bob Barr. Yes, Bob Barr. A Gingrich supporter, I think, as I know it. You know, so, and Gingrich is so pathetic. Talk about a government insider. And he pompously, with all his bluster, comes off like, you know, he'd like to come off like, man, he's somebody important and this and that. But he's just awful, Gingrich. Not just for the consulting money he took from Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac, but he's just such a slimy insider. And I don't care about how many times he's been married. I don't care about any of that. His policies are awful. He's very pro-drug. He says he's a historian. He knows the Constitution. If he knew the Constitution, he would know there was a conversation. Was I talking about conversation? He would know. Sorry, I'm not from the Constitution. He was asked, Gingrich was asked about what the founders would have thought about marijuana. And he said they wouldn't have looked on it very favorably. Well, Newt, Jefferson and Washington grew it. They grew hemp. Hemp was important for ropes, paper, and rigging on ships, I believe, the sails. So, yes, hemp is important stuff. And it'll grow in anywhere, pretty much any soil, any climate. Hemp oil is beneficial, and if you spilled hemp oil into a river or a lake, either accidentally or on purpose, I think it would be like dumping vegetable oil in there. Some vegetable oil. It's not, what's the word? It's not corrosive, not rust causing. I'm not sure, but hemp is a wonderful product. And for those of you who know about the stories of hemp, industrial hemp, which is a cousin to the marijuana plant, can be used for so much, for paper, for, well, of course, fiber. For hemp fiber would still be used for sails because it was a threat to the nylon or the synthetics that DuPont came up with. But hemp has all those purposes. And if you've seen the movie Hemp for Victory, I think it's 1942, you'll see that the U.S. Department of Agriculture, I think in Italy, in league with the military, produced Hemp for Victory, which is about, about a 20-minute film or show, and it's showing American farmers the in and outs of hemp dealing. And it's an interesting thing. I've known the hemp story for about over 20 years, and it's amazing that they keep it hush-hush and that they keep it not secretive, but, you know, inactive, impotent sort of, where it's the knowledge is there and there's a few trinkets made from it, but not on the industrial level that it could be. So that's a problem. Hemp for Victory, 1942, produced by the Department of Agriculture. Because in 1937, thanks to that idiot Harry Anslinger, who was the Prohibition guy, the czar, if you will, well, after Prohibition, he needed something else to regulate, interfere with. So about 2 years later, I believe, he went on his Bible Belt speaking tour about the evils of marijuana and this or that. And he was behind the movie Reefer Madness. So, when in effect, back to Gingrich's stupidity as a so-called historian, he didn't even know that Washington and Jefferson grew hemp. He probably didn't even know that, you know, how popular hemp paper was. But he's just a status quo historian, Gingrich. I can tell by his demeanor and you know, he goes off in these foolish stories, and he comes off with all his bluster, as pompous as he is. You know, as much as I can't stand Romney, if I was forced to pick between Romney and Gingrich, I'd always pick Romney, because I can't stand Gingrich, and I can't stand Romney, but I can't stand Romney less than Gingrich. And, you know, Gingrich is holy. Well, especially Michelle Bachmann. Boy, are they owned by the Israeli lobby and the military-industrial complex. They're very pro-Israel. So, you know, if there's another war, we'll be drawn into that. We don't need it. There's no need to attack Iran. And China's helped them with advanced missile systems. So, you know, they're ready. If I was Iran, I wouldn't invest in an airport. Look how, sorry, in Air Force. Look how expensive an Air Force is. I mean, they could have some helicopters, but an Air Force is very expensive. So from a defensive standpoint, when you've got these new missiles, you know, that is a threat right there. If you want to attack that country, you're going to get a porcupine, you're going to get a hedgehog, a hedgerow right through you. And since an Air Force is so expensive, I'd say, well, the hell with the Air Force. Might have one or two planes, perhaps, if that. Because nowadays, you know, $1.5 million missile can easily sink a $5 billion ship. And I don't think that we need big navies like we used to. Yeah, we need a navy, but we don't need X amount of ships. You know, we only got 275 now or something like that. That's not a bad thing. Got two oceans on, one ocean on each side of us and friendly neighbors north and south. So there you have it. But I don't want to see another war in the Middle East. And the U.S. federal government, they're pinpricking Iran. They're trying to pick a fight. And then if Israel gets in, that means that we'll be drug into it. Of course, we give them all their weapons for free. Their endless supply, Israel's endless supply of free American-made murder weapons. Must be nice. So that's the problem as I see it. And it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. I think this year is going to be worse, actually, for the economy. We haven't bottomed out yet. And Obama, you know, the spending is ridiculous. You know, like I like to say, to the chagrin of a lot of Republicans or conservatives who still think Bush was a good president, I say, you know, Obama's already worse than Bush. Spent more, expanded the wars, you know. Not the kind of president I want. And I laugh and I tell, when I get emails from my friends, different various friends who don't like Obama, when they send these negative emails, I like to write back and say, pray for our commander-in-chief. Ha. I'm sure they get a kick out of that. Anyway, it's good to see Ron Paul still hanging in there. I'll support him to the bitter end. I just wish he'd be more aggressive, you know. I wish I could have coached him. I tried 4 years ago, but the office blew me off because there are some certain things that he could be saying and doing that never water down his message, but might even get it across more. And it's a good way to play defense against the negative stuff that we don't need. So we'll see what happens in the coming primaries. I think Colorado's up soon, or Michigan. Minnesota. It's been said that Ron Paul might win one of those, like Minnesota or somewhere like that. There's a different vibe out there than there is in the. Of course, there's unemployment, but it's not like the the Southern crowds, gung ho Southern crowds in the South, which I've touched on why Hannity has these concerts where he's got the country acts, usually country stars. And that's because, you know, like I like to say, shit kickers and rednecks make good soldiers. And, the income level in the South is lower. There's usually a lot of poverty, often in the South, white, including whites. So that's how I, look at that. What else is happening here? Oh, I was mentioning Syria earlier. I'm not a fan of the dictator, although he's better than his father was. And there's no need for the U.S. to get involved in Syria because they just want to keep involving our country in every other people's civil wars and conflicts and this and that. Well, you get a huge military-industrial complex who keeps turning out all this weaponry. Well, sooner or later, it seems like they're going to get involved or pressure the government, the central state, the feds to get involved in foreign wars or foreign controversies. Maneuver yourself in there with another false flag attack or etc. But they have all these U.S. warships in the Gulf, Straits of Hormuz, I believe. Well, what the heck are they there in the first place? That's not our side of the world. This is like to get upset when China's building an aircraft carrier. Their navy's out there. Well, it's their part of the world. I think ships should be able to travel freely. But there's this way self-inflated American ego about, international borders and the ship and singing and all this. That's how they want to do things. Meanwhile, the federal government continues to wreak heaven, hell abroad and at home. Things he does here at home, intervening in the economy, supporting the wacko environmentalists, and creating wars abroad and dependency on U.S. taxes and U.S. aid. It's such a mess. If they cut it all off, we'd be in much better shape. And there'd be more money in Americans' pockets. Because we're not supposed to give away foreign aid. It's not in the Constitution to do that. If you want to help other people or another cause from another country, you are free to write a check. You're free to send donations there, or should be free to. Or never feel compelled like you have to. So there's that problem. What else do I see on the horizon? I'm still very worried about this country. I'm in good shape, pretty good shape financially. I'm in the black. I have no real debt. I have no credit card debt. I have no mortgage. But I'm still very worried about the economy just because of what's happening or what could happen. I'm in the black, but I think that this year might be worse than last with the overregulation and, according to Obama, which I saw, and I think he's right about this particular instance, he didn't raise taxes per se. And I think he's aware of the importance of low tax free enterprise. Because I don't think we have to be it's a low tax free enterprise. That is the system that I would advocate, unlike other Republicans who talk about big government and wanting to cut taxes. When you really want to do it, like a Ron Paul does, they back away. But he wants to do it, and he would do it. Because they just keep spending. It's ridiculous. There's no restraint on it. It's like giving the heroin addict more heroin or giving the alcoholic more booze. More booze. And sooner or later, like they say, they're kicking the can down the road. That can's going to stop. I know that other countries don't even want to accept dollars, like probably China and Iran and Iraq. They were tired of that. They see where the dollar's going. So, it's a scary thing. I'm glad I'm in a good financial situation, but it's still scary. It's the uncertainty, the climate of uncertainty that's around it. And unless Ron Paul gets the nomination, this country's in bad, worse shape because I don't believe, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, I do not believe that Romney can beat Obama. I think it will be a close race because I've looked at Facebook, YouTube, and the Obama supporters, they're hanging in there. I think we're going to see less bumper stickers and less signs this time, this year, this time around. probably more subtle because they're a little bit unhappy themselves or embarrassed with this clown. But I think the support is very strong, especially from the unemployed and the poor, of course. And, you know, I was going to go... losing my thoughts. I'm running too many thoughts together. You know, that's just the way things are. The poor, the ones he's bought off with more extended unemployment, which I understand people need. There's no jobs and need all this. But, you know, he's, of course, spent his whole life enlarging the welfare state. So he's not going to mind getting more people dependent on government, more on welfare and unemployment checks. So, and these are people who will vote for Obama because he got them through these tough times. You know, he just wants his allegiance to start to do the things he wants. He was upset that our founders made a constitution that makes it more difficult for him to do what he'd like. You know, his social engineering, his social planning. You know, he's just so pathetic. And we don't want it. We don't want it, Obama. So anyway, this crowd of the have-nots and the unemployed and the poor and whatnot, I think they outnumber the Republicans and or conservatives. So I think it'll be a close race, but I think Obama's going to win. And I can't stand Romney, and I can't stand Gingrich. I hate those bastards. I can't stand Sanitarium. So once again, I'm not going to vote if I have to. You know, if those are my choices, I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to support that. Because a vote for either one of them means that you condone their policies and you accept what they have to say. You know, Romney to me is the oily, stuffed shirt, used car salesman. Reminds me of some of these pompous Caucasian, fraternity guys. Hey, babe, we're having a kegger at the house. Why don't you come by? Hey. That's the kind of vibe I get from him. Hey, he's got the hair. He's got the look. He's tall. Hey, he's pretty good looking. Hey, girls, come on by. I'm Mitt Romney. Hey, you know, good old Chicken Hawk Mitt. He didn't go to Vietnam. He was a Mormon missionary. Yet I saw pictures of him or footage of a pro-Vietnam war rally at his campus. And what did it say? Something like, don't debate or... In other words, it was a little moniker to take care of, to use the time wisely. So speaking of using time wisely, it's not easy to wing it and talk about different things or different topics. And I'm not one of the big boys like Rush or Hannity, and they've got all their teleprompters or all their other stuff or all their assistants and all that. I'm just winging it. So like Ron Paul, most of his donations are from just single folks or small businesses. He doesn't have all those huge corporate donors. He's not hooked up to that gravy train. And consequently, lobbyists don't even go to visit him because it's not worth their time. He's not going to vote for anything that's not enumerated in the Constitution. So that's why he doesn't have a lot of lobbyists bugging him. Consequently, he has a lot less baggage. And he was just married for 55 years. I think he just celebrated the 55th anniversary. So I think the poor doctor ought to be paroled. How about you? No, his wife Carol is a wonderful gal. She's at his side. She's very obviously pro-liberty. I've met her. Nice gal. And she hangs in there and she goes to most of the events with him. So, you know, she's a bit overweight, but doesn't seem to slow her down. Which is how I see it. So, in the Super Bowl, I didn't even know who won till today. I know this is heresy, but I don't care about professional sports. I like exercise, and I think sports is for us to play, we the people. But I don't care about professional sports. Yes, there's great athletes who display brilliant prowess at what they do. I get that. But what I really hate is, of course, the mindlessness after the games, and American males won't have much to talk about. But what I especially hate, and I've talked about this before about professional sports, is in any area, in any community, I'm just furious about these damn billionaire team owners and their millionaire players who want us to build them stadiums. tax-funded stadiums. That's not why we have local taxes, as there should be, no income taxes, no federal, or hardly any, and always hardly any. Losing my thoughts a lot tonight, folks. Sorry about that. I was just about to make a good point. I guess I got to write all this stuff down. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit tired, too, after a long day. And a little bit of frustration because they didn't have a guest. But we'll see what these former primaries do. And I hope Ron Paul just stays in there till the end. And then he might be able to broker a convention or have what's he going to do with all his delegates, you know? So I certainly hope he won't support Romney. If I was him, I'd just say I can't support these other candidates because of their views on foreign policy and the Fed. I'd just be upfront about it. Why not say it? Continue speaking truth to power, which is what I would say. I would say either way, if I was or I wasn't going to run, if I wasn't going to run, I'd say I'm not running also because I don't want the Republican hierarchy and the GOP to prosecute my son, Rand Paul, to punish him for the so-called sins of his father. I wouldn't want Rand Paul to be screwed out of his chance or his presidential aspirations. That's why we like the idea of Ron Paul can say, hey, I'm not running as a third party. I said I wouldn't now. You know, you can come out. I strongly will not run as a third party. However, I am going to endorse the Libertarian Party candidate. And if it's Gary Johnson, I'd vote for Gary. You know, he's more of Rand Paul-ish. He's not good enough for me on foreign policy and the military, but he's a lot better than the rest. He wants to end the drug war. He sees the issues with the drug war. So, I don't mind him. But those other clowns, Bush, Cheney, just awful. And that little weasel, David Frum, who wrote the Axis of Evil speech, I see him on TV from time to time. I saw him on news show tonight. I just want to strangle that bastard. And he was a Canadian. I have nothing against Canadians, but I don't know if he got kicked out, but he was already writing up there. So if what he's writing is valid, you know, I'll keep it, but I don't need the spin and all the other BS. So with that, I'm going to wind down the show because, man, it's been a long day. But I am the mighty PK, and I'm letting my suits know that I'm winding down. Hopefully I have some guests in the near future, some interesting guests. But I'm here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, station 2. I am on Pacific time, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. You're welcome to call in and have it out with me or praise me. But if you want to debate me, be prepared, because I take no prisoners. And depending how you debate is depending on how I behave. But anyway, folks, with that, I'm going to sign off now, and I will be back again next week on February 13th here at bbsradio.com, station 2. So until then, this is your not-so-humble host, PK, saying good night, everyone.